Hi, I'm Hani Shamat, Program Coordinator with the Shared Use Mobility Center, a Chicago-based nonprofit dedicated to equitable, sustainable, and connected shared mobility.
And I'm Alex Rosander, mobility enthusiast and former colleague of Hani at the Shared Use Mobility Center.
Plan Dulce is a podcast from the Latinos and Planning Division of the American Planning Association, which elevates projects, issues, and initiatives taking place within Latino communities across the United States. In this episode of Plan Dulce, we're hearing from Jeremy Cuevas and Zaire Menjivar about their work at Northwest Center in Chicago and the Bikes for Belmont Creighton campaign.
Recently, Hani and I developed an evaluation report through the Shared Use Mobility Center for the Northwest Center's Bikes for Belmont Creighton campaign to examine its impacts and influence in the Belmont Creighton neighborhood and in Chicago more broadly. The evaluation report assesses the impact of divvy bikes, bike lanes, and an educational campaign in shifting people's transportation habits and perceptions throughout the neighborhood. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, so can you just start by introducing yourselves and Northwest Center?
Sure. Thank you so much for having us. My name is Zaire. I'm a longtime Belmont Creighton community resident and one of the former youth that was leading the Bikes for Belmont Creighton campaign. And currently, I am a board member on the Northwest Center.
Hey, everyone. I'm Jeremy Cuevas. I am the director of community organizing at the Northwest Center. Nice to see you, Alex and Hani and Zaire. The Northwest Center, formerly known as the Northwest Side Housing Center, is a 501c3 community-based organization in the Belmont Creighton community, which is one of 77 communities in the city of Chicago. We're an organization, and our mission is to respond to the needs of the community, and we do that through free programs and services. We offer foreclosure prevention help, financial coaching, financial budgeting. We help folks register for a program that's state-funded called the LAHIP and CETA, which helps folks with their light and gas bill. Then on the organizing side, we organize around issues that are important to our community, specifically around immigration, youth, housing, and education. We have four youth programs that run in our organization. We work with around 60 youth in a program called Teen Reach that focuses, that primarily operates as a after-school program during the school years and then during the school months. And then during the summer, they have a number of initiatives that they do that are funded through the City of Chicago and the State of Illinois to bring Belmont Creighton together as a community. So that's a little bit about myself and the Northwest Center.
Great, thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Bikes for Belmont Creighton campaign and how it came about?
Sure. I'll go ahead and get us started, and I'll kick it over to Jeremy. So as I mentioned earlier, I was one of the youth on the Belmont Creighton Youth Leadership Council. Now what that was, it was a collection at the time about 12 to 15 students in high school that either lived in Belmont Creighton or went to school in Belmont Creighton. And what we did was we met, I believe it was 4 or 5 times a week, to identify problems in our community and how we could solve them. And almost ironically, the problem that we ended up working on, transportation, wasn't brought up. It was observed. We met out of a community church, and a majority of the youth went to school just down the street, but oftentimes we noticed that they were arriving late to our sessions. And when we would ask them why, we learned that it was because of poor bus service. Some youth also mentioned that they couldn't trust to take their bikes. They didn't feel safe taking their bikes to our program because of lack of infrastructure. And so that's how the campaign came about. It took us about 4 years. Mm-hmm. We really planned about taking our steps one step at a time, if you will. We began to meet with our older people as our local elected officials, and then we worked our way up the ladder. We met with our state reps, our state senators, and we even took a trip to D.C., and we met with our U.S. senators and a few congresspeople that are there. And the main point of that was to request for direct funds to improve the infrastructure in Belmont Creighton. Through our research, we noted that at that time, this is about 2018, 2019, there was only 1 mile of paved bike lanes in Belmont Creighton, whereas the city as a whole had 200 miles. Mm-hmm. So we had one of 200. And through our research, we also noticed that Belmont Cragen had such a high concentration of youth. In fact, this community has the highest concentration of youth in the entire city under the age of 18. Mm-hmm. So you would think that with such a high youth population, that we would have the infrastructure to support our youth in getting to and from church, school, work, but that wasn't the case. So that's a little bit of the background. Jamie, I don't know if you want to continue on and we can...
Yeah, I'm going to step out because I got this all under control. But thanks, Zaire. And I think, everything that Zaire said were sort of the foundation, building blocks of this campaign. And thinking about it from a more broader organizational standpoint, we are resident-led, right? So every campaign that we initiate as an organization comes from our residents. It doesn't come from a staff member. It comes from the residents that we're working with. So as Zaire was saying, I had the honor and the privilege of leading that group called the Belmont Cragen Youth Leadership Council. And we did meet 5 days a week. I can't believe we met 5 days a week, right? That's a lot. In those settings, we would give the space for the young people to really share how they feel about their current reality, about where they live, right? Specifically when it came to their neighborhood. So we were always asking questions to them about if they could have a perfect neighborhood, right? What would it be? Or what would you want to see in your neighborhood that you don't currently have? And what we kept coming back to was this idea of improving public transportation, right? Bike lanes, buses, walkability, sidewalks, everything that had to be, everything that was related to public transportation. And I think we landed on our three goals. If I remember them correctly, it was to go from 1.2 miles of bike lanes to over 5 miles of bike lanes, to go from zero divvy stations, because we also didn't have any bike share options. Divvy existed in the city of Chicago for 10 years, and we never had a divvy station in Belmont Cragen. We would have to go to another community to get one. And then we would have to go back to that community to drop it off because you couldn't leave it in Belmont Cragen or else you'd be charged for it. So we had no divvy stations at all. And also our bus service, specifically the diversity bus line, was failing us. And how we know that is one of the leading nonprofit transportation groups, Active Transportation Alliance, did a citywide report card of buses, and Belmont Cragen is comprised of three different wards. And between those wards, they were averaged an F. And the diversity bus line was averaged an F minus because of bunching, cleanliness, and timeliness. So we're looking at all these different things that are not in our favor. And our youth actually called Belmont Cragen, dubbed it a transportation desert because we didn't have any transportation options or infrastructure in our community. So...
Yeah, I think real quick to expand on that, not only did we not have sufficient bike lanes, we had no bike share systems. We had a few bus lines that were mediocre per Active Trans's data, but also we didn't have any reliable train systems. There was really no option other than a car or walking in the community. Even walking had its own issues with the infrastructure on the sidewalks. So it was a multifaceted issue that our youth, not only the youth, the business owners, the property owners, the older adults, everyone facing the community, and no one was doing anything about it. Yeah. As Jeremy mentioned, Divvy had existed for 10 years before it arrived in Belmont Cragen, and no one ever thought to bat an eye towards the Northwest side, towards this primarily Latino community, until we began to organize through that. Now, I'm going to keep progressing a little bit timeline-wise. As I mentioned, it's about 2018, 2019. When we began meeting with our elected officials, we began to receive verbal support. They would say, oh, I like the idea. You're right. We should have more bike lanes. We should have a better bus system. But nothing was really concrete. And just about the time that we began to make progress, COVID happened. And as we all know, that shut down everything for everyone for a long period of time. And that really forced us to reevaluate our plan, because even though the pandemic hit, we weren't deterred, and we weren't going to let that stop us from getting our campaign. Like Jeremy mentioned, we wanted 5 miles of bike lanes. I believe it was 5 divvy stations.
Mm-hmm. That was our second goal. Right. Is 5 divvy stations, and then the last goal was for diversity to go from an F to a C.
So we had those three goals. And even though COVID hit, we were not deterred. We still wanted to reach those goals. So as it became safe again for outdoor congregations, we began to host bike rides to all the community, not just youth. And from there, the bike rides became weekly, and they got bigger and bigger every time. And as we began to get steam, we began to have our bike rides. But after, we would reflect. Before we let everybody go, we would take 5 minutes and we would ask them, what did you think about that ride? How did you enjoy it? What would you improve on it? And time after time again, from different residents, we heard that, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't do it by myself. Mm. I wouldn't feel safe. We were riding in groups of 20, maybe 25, and they felt safe then, but they told us that they wouldn't ride by themselves. So as part of our reevaluation, we began to give our residents the power and the say of where they would want bike lanes, where they would want divvy stations. So as these weekly bike rides progressed, we began to end at the Northwest Center, and we would have a big map of the community. And we would give all the residents who attended the ride two stickers. One was, I think, was like purple, and one was like green. And we would tell them to physically place the sticker where they would want a bike lane, like what street, and to physically place the other color sticker where they would want a DV station. And once we collected that data, we were able to come back to our elected officials, our local older people, and also CDOT, the Chicago Department of Transportation, and present this data to them and sort of work with them to make it a reality. Jeremy, I don't know if you want to add to that.
No. Nothing to say to that question. You did a great job.
That's awesome. So taking a step back a little bit, I mean, I think part of what makes Bikes for Belmont Cragin and a lot of the work that you do really unique and really compelling is that it's largely a youth-driven initiative. So can you talk a little bit about what some of the benefits of that are and some of the challenges and, you know, how you think that influenced the outcome?
Yeah, considering that a third of the population in Belmont Cragin is under the age of 18, I think for me, one thing that was an advantage of working with young people is, from my experience, is when you're young and you're in high school, after school, you have some time, right? You have some time to join a program, to be a part of something, right? And I know some young people are busy, right? They have jobs. But the young people that we were working with specifically, they had time, right? They had time to go to school. Then after school, they came straight to us. And we had a good 2 hours with them to eat. We ordered a lot of Mama Luna's pizza in Belmont Cragin. So we had a lot of time to eat, tell jokes, hang out. But we also had a lot of time to build relationships and to talk about these issues. And I think that was one of the advantages that I saw from a leadership standpoint working with young people. I think one of the challenges that I – and I don't know if challenges were part of the question, honey. I don't know if it was. But I think one of the challenges for me of working with young people was that I felt with the group that I had that they were no one really empowered them. No one really took the time to say, hey, your voice matters, right? And I know – some of the young people that we worked with, right, like come from very diverse and unfortunate circumstances at home with family and that whole power dynamic at school, right? Teachers sometimes say harsh things to students, right? And that forms their life and shapes their path moving forward. And so I say it's a challenge because as an organization, it's our mission to empower young people and to empower residents. And I ran into a lot of issues where I wanted to empower young people, but when they would leave back home or go back to school, they were in environments where they didn't feel empowered. So for 2 hours, how many hours do we meet a week? 10?
Yeah.
For 10 hours a week, they're feeling empowered. But for the other 50, 60 hours they're spending outside of our time, they don't feel that same way. So for those 2 hours, I had that small window to do as much as I could as an organizer to empower these young people and make sure that they felt that their voice mattered. And I think that's what we saw in our campaign.
Yeah, no. Going off of that, I would agree. I think one of the biggest obstacles and challenges was like the best part of working with youth. As a youth myself at that time, was there's a lot of similarities between us. We watched the same shows, we played the same games, we had similar backgrounds, we lived in the same community, and we were able to relate. When one person would say, oh man, I missed the bus the other day, five other hands would shoot up and say, yeah, me too. So we had that common ground, and that allowed us to establish relationships with each other, some of which I still talk to this day. Some youth that I was in the council with that I met through the youth council, I still hold dear relationships with them today. And I think the biggest challenge through this work was our perception from external audiences. As Jeremy mentioned, when we were meeting and you have a room full of youth, we're all agreeing, we're all empowered, we're all ready to run through a brick wall, if you will. We're ready to make the world a better place. But when we would go out into that world and we would meet with elected officials, or we would, you know, speak to business owners, oftentimes we weren't met with that same respect, we weren't met with that same empowerment. That was a challenge. And I'll give one anecdote without naming any names. Jeremy and I, we did a bike ride. And at the bike ride, one of the older people of Belmont Cragen was there. He's no longer in office, but he was there at that time. And Jeremy pulled me to the side and he said, look, this is a great opportunity. The older person's right here. Let's just go up to him, introduce yourself, and let's see if we can get a meeting about the bike lanes. And this was, if I had to put a timeline, I would say May or June of 2020, so a little bit after the pandemic, but it was safe to congregate outdoors, and it's an outdoor event. So I approached the older person, I introduced myself, I said, I'm from Wolf Northwest Center, we would like to meet with you in your office about getting bike lanes. And almost immediately he cut me off, and he said, no, I'm not meeting with anybody right now, COVID, I cannot do that. And almost started to walk away. And he didn't, I don't even think he heard what the meeting was about. He was just very standoffish, very close the door. So that's what I mean. Right at that time, I was 16, 17 years old. And although I had Jeremy next to me, I was seen as just a youth. So that was a challenge.
I don't even think it was because of the pandemic. I think we were on the tail end of it. It had nothing to do with, I don't think it had anything to do with the pandemic. I think it had everything to do with a constituent, a young constituent, approaching a seasoned politician in power. And we have an organizing saying that power respects power, but in the same way, power disrespects weakness, right? And we saw that in action. We saw a person in power basically dismiss somebody who he thought was weak and couldn't do nothing. And yeah, so—
And mind you, no, with this example, at that time, like I said, I was 16, 17, but I was his constituent.
Yeah.
And I told him that. And I don't know if he saw that, oh, you're not 18 yet, you can't
vote for me.
Or if he saw that I'm just a kid in high school. But that's one of those things, those challenges that it can deter, you know, your confidence or your strength, if you will. But it didn't for us. That was almost like fuel, you know, to keep going. Me and Jeremy looked at each other afterwards and we were like, okay. That's how he wants to play. Like, let's do that.
It was sort of discouraging, right? Just seeing as a leader, right? Seeing that happen to, because when you want to make an ass of an elected official, it's always, you, as an organizer, you always want that to come from your leaders, right? From the residents that you're working with. So part of us wanting to have that conversation with him was, hey, at the time, I didn't live in Belmont Cragen. I was just working there. And that's still true to this day. I grew up in Belmont Cragen my whole life. Went to public school in Belmont Cragen. But the reality is, I don't live there, right? I just work there. So having Zaire go up to him as a constituent, as a young person, that's more powerful than me coming up to him as a staff member of an organization. And that all ensued. But like Zaire said, that didn't deter us. We were a little bit shocked and like, oh, okay, like that's cool, but we're gonna turn that into a positive. And I think we did.
Went from, you know, advocating and trying to get the attention of elected officials and, you know, traveling to D.C. and doing all these things to build awareness, to get bike infrastructure, to have people start listening to you, to the point where you were having discussions with CDOT about, okay, these bike lanes are going to happen and these are where they're going to go. And this isn't just an idea anymore. It's going to happen. Mm. Do you feel like there was a particular moment that was super pivotal where it kind of shifted your perception as to like, okay, we're really doing this and this isn't just kind of an idea anymore. It's reality.
That's a great question. I don't know if you have any immediate thoughts out here. I'm trying to think. Yeah, when was that moment?
I have one.
Yeah.
I think, like I mentioned, we were doing weekly bike rides coming out of the pandemic. And the first ride, there was like four of us. It was me, Jamie, and two or three other youth. But, you know, come August, September, we were rolling deep. You know,
deep, 50 deep.
A lot of people were coming out to our bike rides. And I think that was right around the time where CDOT began to reach out to us. Yeah. So I'm guessing we made enough noise.
Yeah.
And CDOT said, oh, snap, we have to listen to them. We have to work with them. We were meeting with elected officials, and we were getting verbal support. We even got letters of support from them. But it wasn't until the pandemic hit, and we're doing these bike rides, and we're engaging our residents, and we're asking them, where would you want to have bike lanes and bike share stations? And we had the data. And it wasn't until then, towards the tail end of that summer, early fall, where by making enough noise, CDOT came to the table, DV came to the table, and we were able to have those conversations.
Yeah, I think for me, first, I just want to give a huge shout out to a couple people in CDOT that I want to name: Amanda Woodall, Romina Castillo, David Smith, Brad Huff, that are at CDOT to this day. I think for me, one of the moments, there's a lot of those moments, but one of the moments was, as an organizer, you're always thinking about relationships, right? You're always trying to build those relationships with, whether it's elected official, a resident, or city department. And I think, I don't know what year it was probably 2020, I don't know, one of those years where we were just rolling. And we started to really develop really close relationships with those folks that I just named from CDOT. Like, they wouldn't just come to our rides that were scheduled, right, and just coming to our rides to get data or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they were coming to things that we were doing in our organization that they didn't have to come to. Mm. They were showing up because we had a relationship. Zaire was building those. I was building those. Other young people were reaching out to them. And, yeah, it was just like, I, for me, it wasn't an event or something that was like that happened. It was the feeling of like, man, we're really building a strong relationship with CDOT, and we're making strides in our campaign. We're making maps. We have a timeline. We have dates, and we're starting to actually see this come to light. If I could sum it up in one event, it was probably like the year before the bike lanes came, and CDOT showed up to our annual bike ride, Bikes by Montcraggan. And they came deep, like they came with a lot of their staff. They came with posters. They came with maps that we created to show the bike lanes and the divvy stations. And it was then where we ended in our parking lot every year. And we're seeing all these maps and we're seeing people getting excited. For me, that was probably one of the moments where I was like looking at Ron like, this is happening. We're getting bike lanes and divvy stations. And before I stop talking, I also want to give a shout out to Divvy. Johnson A. Johnson, who I don't know what she does at Divvy now, but I know she's still there, but she was great. Those whole years just building the relationship with us and always showing up to our rides with Divvy bikes and always just coming through for us. So just want to shout out those folks who without them, we would probably be still fighting for bike lanes. So.
Well, I think about the work that you've all done in Belmont Craigan regarding transportation and this bike infrastructure. And there's kind of two pieces. So there's the work that you did regarding just getting this infrastructure in place, and then the work you did around educating residents and bringing awareness to the fact that this infrastructure is available now. Do you feel prepared? Do you feel comfortable enough to even use it, right? And so I'd be curious if you guys could talk a little bit about the like outreach methods. I know you guys mentioned you guys held weekly bike rides and that sort of thing, but some other methods you use to build awareness around these new transportation options and get people riding.
Yeah,
sure. I'll go ahead and start us off. I think with raising awareness, that was an interesting process because oftentimes in such a car dominates society, biking is frowned upon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we saw that. We saw that with our older adults. Many of them were against the bike lanes. They didn't want it on their street. You know, the whole not in my backyard concept.
Bike lane myths. Yeah. It comes with gentrification. It comes with all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, put the bike lanes on a different block, not mine. And so to really challenge that is sort of challenging antiquated ideologies, right? Because as the youth, right, we love to bike. You know, we were biking all the time. Some of the adults were biking, but older adults, you know, they come from a different time. And it's not to disrespect them or discredit them, but biking wasn't as normalized and the infrastructure wasn't there decades ago. I think having the conversations with them, bringing them to the table, right? We brought everybody. We had business owners. We had restaurant owners. We had faith-based leaders come to these meetings, come to these bike rides. It wasn't about convincing them. We weren't trying to persuade them or, you know, change their way of thinking. We just wanted them to see our way of thinking. That maybe an older adult might not get on a bike. They might not be buying a bike and, you know, going on a 20-mile bike ride. We get that. But if they can at least see that, hey, moving forward, when you park your car, you might have to look a little bit over to your blind spot, a biker might be coming. Or if a biker's on the road with you, here's how you, you know, share the road with them properly. Those conversations are what we wanted to have, you know, with our different population. I think with our youth, it was almost like instantaneous. Oh, snap, we're getting divvies, cool. Let me sign up. And then once they signed up, it was smooth sailing from there. But it was definitely, I wouldn't say it was a challenge. I would say it's almost a curveball to meet with different populations and different demographics to educate them, but also to, you know, get them registered with DV, to get them involved.
Yeah, and the way we did that, Alex, too, I also want to shout out a couple more people.
Go for it.
Your sticker reminded me, Bikes and Roses, they were a huge part of our bike task force that helped identify the bike lanes. They brought their young people that they're working with to those meetings. Yeah.
And can you just explain real quick for the listeners what Bikes and Roses is?
Yeah, I don't know too much about Bikes and Roses. All I know is that their youth showed up to our meetings, and that's all I cared about, like show up to the meetings. But I think it's they're a bike shop.
They're a nonprofit bike shop.
Yeah, they're a nonprofit bike shop in just right outside of Belmont Cragen.
They're actually right inside.
Okay, the border, then Belmont Cragen. They're right inside of Belmont Cragen. And shout out to Danny Limones, or I don't know if I'm saying her last name right. She always kills me if I say her last name wrong. Sorry, Danny. But they're a nonprofit bike shop in Belmont Cragen, and we actually partnered with them for 2 years to do bike repair workshops for our students and our community. So to answer some of your questions of like, how do we do that education? Mm-hmm. We get a grant from the Department of Public Health called Play Streets, and we do 10 block parties on 10 different blocks in Belmont Cragen. And for two of those years that we got, I think it's 2020 and 2021, we partnered with Bikes and Roses to come out to our block parties, and they would bring their young people, and Danny would come with bike repair kits. And residents would not only come out to Play Streets to hang out and have fun, but if there were residents coming out with bikes that they haven't ridden in years because they don't know how to change an inner tube. They didn't know how to ride on a bike lane properly. They didn't know much about how to ride bike in a community. And they would come and provide those services to them. We actually partnered with them for 2 years. So that was one way that we did the education, actually talk to people on the streets day to day during the summer. And then as summer was starting to Chicago weather, right? Like what summer, what spring, what are we in right now? Like,
yeah, right.
Are we going to get any more snow? I don't know. But as the weather started to get colder and folks are not riding as much, we developed a series called Pump the Brakes. And Pump the Brakes was developed because we can't do weekly bike rides. So we decided to host a weekly conversation around current status of biking and transportation in Belmont Cragen. And we invited everyone, not just bikers, drivers, people who are truckers that live in Belmont Cragin, and it turned into sort of like a peace circle because you had people coming with different perspectives and different experiences of bikes, like Zaire was saying about, we don't, bike lanes this and the roads are for cars, right? And that's how they're designed. So we actually developed that series to bridge the gap intergenerationally between all ages, not just young people, but older adults, like Zaire was saying, small business owners, stakeholders in the community, principals, elected officials. And that's another way that we got the word out, had conversations. We had guests come into those Pump the Brake series, state representatives, aldermen, to talk about what they're doing legislatively from a city and a state level, aldermen to come on and ask questions to any of their constituents on those calls, invite folks to our next action. Bikes and Roses did a workshop on the anatomy of a bike and different parts of the bike, just fun stuff to do. So that was another way that we got the word out, education, did some educational workshops, we just integrated it in every piece of our work, not just with the organizing, but in every program, in every staff meeting. Our transportation work was present in everything that we did.
I just want to say before we continue, Jeremy, you unlocked a memory I forgot I had. Oh, I completely forgot about the Pump the Brakes.
Yeah, man.
I know we were meeting, but I completely forgot about the name. The name was
we did
I
so much, and out. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah, and Bikes and Roses, again, we couldn't have done that without Bikes and Roses. We decided to partner with them, and we planned those weekly, I don't know if it was two-hour sessions or... And yeah, we wouldn't have been able to do that without them either. So
that's great.
Yeah.
And so about partnership building, and about making connections, what are some takeaways? What did you learn? What was hard?
Yeah, I always think about what was hard because it was, and I don't know, Zaire, if you have any insight to this, but for me, getting the bike lanes and the divvy stations in Belmont Cragin, and that process to me as an organizer, that's the easy part, right?
I would agree.
The hard part of all of this is building relationships with residents, with partners, not just building relationships, but building trusted relationships, right? And I think that's something that we have been able to do, right, with SUMC, and not just doing this report, right, but Alex, you coming to our rides. Before I even knew you worked at SUMC, like, I remember you showing up and I was like, hey, what's your name? I didn't know who you were, but you came, right? And honey, you coming to Belmont Cragin, right? And us staying in communication. Like, there's a difference between building relationships transactionally and building trustworthy relationships. And I think from an organizational standpoint, that's what we strive to do, is to build those trusted relationships with our partners, with our elected officials who are neither an enemy or an ally. They're in the middle. You could be an enemy or an ally. You can switch one day to the next if you're an elected official. But that's the hardest part. The hardest part is building those trusted relationships, especially working with young people. Because trust is a big deal with students in high school or junior high. Like, they understand power. They understand relationships. They understand that dynamic, right? They have parents. They have teachers. I'm dealing with it with my son now, right? He understands power. He's 4 years old. He understands power. He knows how to ask mommy this and don't ask dad this. So they get that, right? So that's the hard part. The easiest part is getting paint on the ground and choosing a station. But the hardest part is building those relationships, who to involve, who to trust. So, yeah.
I think also, like Jeremy said, the hardest part was not getting the bike lanes. Mm-hmm. Was it the most time-consuming? Yes, but it wasn't the hardest.
Yeah.
I think when you look at it from a racial equity standpoint, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, the city of Chicago before our campaign had 200 miles of bike lanes within city limits.
Talk about it, yep.
Yeah, we only had 1 mile. That shows us that other neighborhoods in the city had a substantial amount of bike infrastructure, of bike share stations, bike racks, everything. And so, not perhaps being pessimistic or catastrophizing, once we got the bike lanes, it was almost like, oh snap, now we got to get people on the bike lanes. Yeah. And I think, thinking of the worst, we didn't want to give, I don't want to say haters, but haters like a reason to be like, yeah,
just call them haters.
Like we knew it wasn't gonna work. Yeah, we didn't want to have the I told you so moment.
Yeah.
So that's when it came out, the education and the getting people signed up for Divi, Divi Bike, the bike memberships, because we wanted to prove almost to people outside of the neighborhood that we were a neighborhood who wanted this and are going to use it, if you will. And I remember 2021, late 2021, Divi had also expanded to other communities on the Northwest side and the West side. And they told us, like, after, I believe it's a 6 or 8 month period, that of all the communities that they expanded to in that period of time, including Belmont Cragin, that Belmont Cragin had the highest usership. The percentage of people who use DB stations in Belmont Cragin.
We had 12,000 rides in the year of 2021. 12,000 rides, and I think other communities, including wealthier neighborhoods who had bike lanes, who had Divi for years, had only like 5,000-6,000. And Belmont Cragin had 12,000 rides. And a part of that came from, we received a grant through the People's for Bikes Foundation that really helped us. Shout out Tangier Barnes. We were able to use some of that funding to purchase Divi membership. So there's a program in Divi called Divi for Everyone. It's a $5 a year membership. We actually helped change the way that they do the registration for it. Previously, you would have to go to their website, upload documents, prove that, you know.
Like residency.
Yeah, like residency or like low income, right, and prove that. Our feedback to Divi was like, hey, why don't we as an organization purchase memberships from you, and then we just give them out to residents in the community at our events that who we're in communication with. So we actually purchased 2,500 $5 memberships and gave them out at our ribbon cutting of the first Divi bike station at Cragin Park. We had a line around the whole block of people waiting to get a Divi for Everyone membership. And I don't know what question we're on, but yeah, that just sparked the memory too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that was, yeah.
Yeah, I think and part of our evaluation was looking at, you know, the Divi trips in Belmont Cragin compared to these other areas, other neighborhoods that Divi expanded to around the same time. Yeah. And there was a clear, you know, delineation that the performance was better in Belmont Cragin.
Yeah.
The ridership was just higher. So the proof is in the pudding, I suppose.
Yeah, the proof is in the pudding too. And I think Zaire kind of mentioned this as well too. I was starting to realize that it was bigger than just Belmont Cragin. Divi didn't exist in the West Side or South Side either. It wasn't just us.
Right.
They didn't exist in other Black and Brown communities as well. And it sparked the question, why?
Mm-hmm.
Right, like why is Divi not expanding? Why is there not a bike network in the South and West Sides
for
the
whole
city?
Yeah.
Why does it just exist in certain parts? Right. So we're thinking through these questions in a time in 2020 where racial injustice was a big conversation, right? Equality, right? As we're having these conversations and things are happening nationally around us, right? With you know, different situations, we're starting to think, how is this affecting us? How is racial injustice affecting us? And we couldn't help to think that, you know, why are we not getting these resources that we deservingly need if we have such a big youth population? So like, I think we start to realize that it was bigger than just Belmont Cragin. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, why is this happening in other communities? And we started to talk to other organizations and create coalitions. And now Austin, right? We're talking to Austin and they're talking about Divi bikes and connecting our bike network to theirs, and Austin connecting to North Lawndale and Garfield Park connecting to the South Side and making that movement. And Equiticity is one of our partners in that as well, along with many others.
Yeah, I think also it's a great shout out to Equiticity, by
the way. Yeah, shout out Obai.
I work there now. But that was one of the questions, because when you think about the way the Divi station, the bike share system works, is that you should be able to pick up a bike at any station, bike to your destination, whatever that may be, jump off your bike, you know, lock it, and do the same thing to come back. So for someone who wanted to bike to school, bike to work, you should be able to bike, to grab a bike in your community. And it should be accessible and it should be walkable to get to that bike. Once you get it, you should be able to bike to anywhere in the city. Whatever you have to do, wherever you work, whatever, wherever you study, you should be able to do that, drop off the bike, and be able to do the vice versa to get home. And that's what always blew our mind when me and Jeremy would meet and the youth would meet about Divi specifically, is how has Divi been open for so long? It's been in the city for so long. I believe the first stations came up in like 2013, 2012. How did this system work for so long, only serving a certain population of the city?
It wasn't working, right?
Right, that's what we realized.
Yeah. And then, and also shout out to Divi too, right? Like they're like they made it work, right? Like, now they're in Southside, Westside. And one of the other campaigns that came out of this campaign was the Divi pricing change after bikes were, and bike stations were made available to us. The pricing structure changed where now, if I'm remembering correctly, it was a higher per minute charge for e-bikes, and that's all we had in Belmont Cragin. So it went from this is the price before the bikes get there, and then once the bikes are landed, we felt like it was switched on us, right?
Yeah. So to share a little bit more on that, the way the Divi for Everyone system worked that Jeremy mentioned that we helped residents sign up for was with that $5 per year membership, a resident could take any Divi bike and they would have unlimited 45-minute rides, unlimited throughout the whole year. But shortly after the bike system was installed in Belmont Kirkland and we had Divi stations, they changed the price.
No more 45 minutes.
To where it was only 45 minutes for the blue classic bikes, the ones that weren't e-bikes.
And that we couldn't have in Belmont Cragin because those are, you had to dock those. Right. And we had no docks. Right. Yeah, no docks.
The stations that were installed in Belmont Cragin just had room for a little hook.
Yeah, dockless,
Yeah, it was a dockless stations mainly and only for e-bikes. And this was like, I would say like 3 or 4 months after the Divi stations came in, they had to change the price. And that was something where it was almost like, okay, problem solved, but problem is back.
Because problem solved, problem back.
Because now we have the stations, we have the bikes, but our community, we signed up, you said 2,500 people, now they couldn't use the Divi bikes.
And they're calling our office.
Right.
Mad, saying, hey, we got these bikes, but
I'm getting charged now.
They're too expensive. I'm getting charged $30 for a single ride.
Right.
$20 for a single ride. So we started to organize, and we got Divi on the phone. We got CDOT on the phone, and this is unacceptable. And one of the list of demands we had was we need blue bikes with stations in Belmont Cragin. And lo and behold, the blue bikes and stations are coming this summer. So they made an announcement. I think it was last summer. They made an announcement saying that Divi bikes, not just e-bikes, will be made available citywide by the end of 2024. So that's huge for us because we went from, like Zaire said, problem solved to another problem. Now the problem solved. And that will last until they change it. Then we got to change it back.
In addition to Divi, you know, bringing back the traditional bikes docking stations about Mount Cragin, they're putting more than what we originally plan.
So shout out to Divi for making it right.
Yeah.
So how many miles of bike lane do you have now? How many Divi stations do you have now?
So our original goal was to go from 1.2 miles to 5 miles of bike lanes. Currently in Belmont Cragin, there's over 15 miles of bike lanes. And one of the other goals was to go from 0 Divi stations to Zaire, three we wanted?
Three to five.
3 to 5. And now there's 13 Divi stations in Belmont Cragin. We are not a transportation desert anymore. We're a transportation oasis.
That's right.
Are there any personal testimonies you've heard from residents related to this bike infrastructure, to these Divi bikes being available that has particularly stood out to you and really you feel like resembled the effort and work you all have put in these past few years?
Yeah, I have one. And if she ever hears this, she'll probably kill me that I'm saying her name. But her name is Delia Arroyo. She lives in Belmont Craig. And this was a resident that we did a Play Streets event at on their block. And Bikes and Roses coming out with their bike repair equipment. Delia had a bike that was in her garage for 10 years. 10 years, just one day the tire went out and they didn't know how to, I mean, and just didn't know how to, or I have a flat. And I remember me going into her garage to get it, and we got it. We got her bike, Bikes and Roses, put it up on the bike rack, fixed it up, and now she's an avid bike rider in the neighborhood that I see riding bike almost every single day. And that couldn't have happened if, for a lot of different reasons, right, that we all just named. So that's just one story about somebody, you know, having a bike, and we brought our service to them, mm-hmm. and they were able to now bike throughout the whole neighborhood and city.
Yeah, and I have testimony, not as specific as Jeremy. I don't have names, but I live in Belmont Creek and just blocks from the Northwest Center. And I am one block away from Wrightwood Avenue. Mm. And Wrightwood Avenue is one of the streets that got a bike lane. It's a small residential street. And the Wrightwood bike lane was really important because it connected, I believe it was like four or five schools along the one straight shot on Wrightwood Avenue and East West Street. And so after the bike lanes got installed, I'm an avid biker, so I would go on a bike ride or I would drive to work or whatever. And every morning, even in the winter months, every morning I would see youth on their bikes. Biking to school.
I don't think I know this story.
Yeah.
Do I know this?
No, maybe not.
Breaking news.
So I drive on Wrightwood every day, right? I bike on Wrightwood. And even in the winter months, 20 degrees outside, you have youth biking one way to get to school. And you look at the hour, like, oh, they're going to school. It's like 7:30 a.m. You know they're going to school. So I would say that that's a big testimony to see that because, you know, as I'm, I guess, getting older, I'm 20 years old now, but I transitioned out of high school. I still see the current high schoolers and the junior hires that are growing into high schoolers. Now that they're dependent on the system, that when I was in high school, I didn't have that system, right?
Yeah.
But now they do. Yeah. So that's a testimony to be able to look to the next generation or, you know, a few years younger than me to be able to take advantage. And they do.
I think that's one of the things that we talked about too, Zaire, was that these bike lanes ultimately are not for us, right? They're for the generations that are coming
follow.
After us, right? And if anyone ever sees the report or any pictures from Bikes from Mount Cragen, the ribbon cutting of the first Divvy station, we had a child cut it. You know, it was me, myself, an alderman, and some staff. But we made it, I think we made that decision. It was a strategic decision to have this child who's one of the
like eight,
yeah
seven,
she
eight.
Was a sister of one of the youth council members, Minerva,
right,
who's in Harvard now, got a full ride to Harvard Scott University, who was part of our organization,
and she's interning in DC.
She's studying transportation policy at Harvard. That's another success story. That's like a whole other podcast. So if y'all ever want to get some good stuff from Minerva, that's great. So it's her little sister, right, that was cutting it. And that was a very strategic move on our end because I know I drive, right? Zaire is older, right? Now he has a car and we bike ride, not as often, but the generation that Zaire's talking about that rides bike, they use this now. And the generations will continue to use it.
Your siblings will use it. And then lo and behold, their children will use it.
Yeah. And even continuing the current generation to get on bikes, right? Like, I need to bike more, right? Like, we all could bike more. So even, like, leaving the car for a little bit and riding bike is what we want to see, too. So
right. This is a culture shift.
Yeah,
you're planting the seeds, and this isn't just about, you know, this insulated community. It's about how this, I don't know, like, shifts in the future. It's ever-going. It's ever-changing.
It's intergenerational, right?
Yeah.
It's not intergenerational. It's generational. This type of work affects generations, not just our generation, but the ones behind us and then their generation too. So the work that we did is it's going to affect generations to come. It's really a legacy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about this in particular, but one of the really unique things that kind of came out of this whole initiative was the Transit Ambassador Program.
Yeah.
And so I was curious if you all could speak a little bit upon that. Because I think there are a lot of communities who maybe face similar mobility challenges, feel like they don't have a voice, maybe feel like they can't make change. And I guess in that turn, is there any advice that you would give to people, youth or just, you know, older adults in these neighborhoods or in these communities that like to do similar work? But yeah, would love to hear you talk about the transit ambassadors and
Yeah, for sure. So the transit ambassadors was created as our transportation work started to grow. So as it started to grow, our youth council started to identify different issues in the neighborhood, right? And this is post bike lanes. This is post Divvy station. So now with the transit ambassadors, now we're talking about the educational portion of their work. So now as our youth council is starting to identify public safety issues and different things going on in the neighborhood, our transportation work was still growing and still alive. So with additional funding that we received from foundations and different areas, we decided to contract not only young people, but make the transportation ambassadors generational. So we had our youngest transportation ambassador, Emmanuel, was at the time 14 years old or 13. And then our oldest transportation ambassador was like 60 or like 65. I never knew his real age, but he one time said what year he was born. I'm bad at math, so I was trying to calculate it. It landed in that area of like 65. So the transit ambassadors were really an intergenerational group of transit leaders in the community that bike ride, that take the bus, and that wanted to continue to educate folks in the community, not only do weekly bike rides, but continue the Pump the Brake series, speak at conferences, because we were asked to speak at some C conference. We traveled all the way to Mexico and Guadalajara to speak at the North American Bike Share Association conference that I missed because my son was sick. He got sick the day before. And I had my ticket bought, and I told our executive director and the team, I said, hey, my son's in the hospital, I can't go. But thankfully, he's fine. But I couldn't be there, right? So we're being asked now to speak at different arenas just about how did we partner with CDOT? How did we do this while also changing the policy for the Divvy price change? So that was all part of their work, right? To host weekly bike rides, Pump the Brake series, but also do all this. One of the transit ambassadors said it was like a bike tour. Like we were asked to go like different places to speak, and we were like delegating who's gonna go speak where. So it was really to just educate folks on the current infrastructure that we have in Belmont Craigan. But also, now that I think about it, the group was also created and existed to really talk about the work, to talk about the work that we did and the work that they were a part of. One of the things that came out of the transit ambassadors was shortly after Lori Lightfoot got elected as mayor, they developed a Chicago Mobility Collaborative, which is quarterly citywide transportation meetings. And we were asked, our transit ambassador group was asked to sit on the accountability leadership, you know, kind of cohort to help them steer those meetings, help them plan them, help them, you know, have a role in it. So that's one thing that came from our group, and we would attend those meetings. There's a meeting next week, Thursday, in Chinatown, quarter one meeting. So if anybody's available, it's at 7:30. I'll say the address at the end. But so that's a little bit about the transit group and how that formed. They were intergenerational, and shout out to them, all of them.
And then what advice would you give to, you know, other communities or other organizations looking to do something similar?
Yeah, before I pass it to Zaire, mine is very simple. Any advice that I have for any other community And we said this at City Civics Day. We were asked to do a presentation with CDOT at City Civics Day. And I'll give you the same answer, is the hard work is in tilling the soil. Tilling the soil is the hardest work that you can do. And what I mean by that is, before organizing, I was a landscaper. I used to work for my brother's landscape company, and we used to lay down sod, right? Grass that comes called cut up. And the hardest part of that process to see the grass grow is tilling the soil first. You got to take out all the impurities, the weeds. You got to make it level. You got to till the soil. And then when you lay the grass down, the grass will grow. The hardest part of any campaign is tilling the soil, meaning building relationships. Building relationships, building relationships. People ask me, how do I start organizing? Talk to your neighbor. Go next door. Talk. Do you know your neighbor? Do you know your person that lives across the street from you? Do you know your elected official? Do you know this person? Go talk to them first. That's the hard part. Because after coming home from work, after you just want to chill, eat dinner, that's the hard work, is going outside and talking to people. So yeah, till the soil. Talk to people. Build relationships with those people that you think have power, and start there.
Yeah, I would say for me, advice for another organization, another group, would be don't take no for an answer.
That's right.
I think
spoken like a true organizer.
There's always someone who's going to tell you your idea is too big, or it's never going to happen, or not in this city, not right now. And if Jeremy and I would have accepted that, from that elected official, that one day in 2020,
that's right,
we wouldn't be here right now.
That's right.
If we would have took his, you know, what he said was like, yo, we're not meeting right now. If we had been like, all right, well, we tried. What's next? Yeah. We would never be here right now. We would never be talking about bike lanes and bike share stations. And the youth that I mentioned would never be biking to school every morning at 7:30 a.m. So I think it's all about that. It's all about organizing isn't linear. There is no manual. There is no do this and you'll get this. Every experience is different. Every organization is different. Every campaign is different. But if you stay focused and you stay in line and in tune to the true campaign, the true goal, I believe that anything's possible, that any campaign can be passed, any legislation can be passed, you know, to improve the life of those in any community.
That's right.
In the world.
That's right.
One question I have is, what is your favorite thing about Belmont Kurgan a neighborhood?
I get emotional. Oh man.
Okay. My favorite thing about Belmont Kurgan is the sense of community that I feel in Belmont Kurgan. We didn't mention this, but Belmont Kurgan is the fastest growing community population-wise in the entire city of Chicago. And it's 80% Latino. And so when you're walking in Belmont Kurgan, you know, you're walking to a supermarket or you're walking to a taqueria to get some tacos, everyone is, hey, buenos dias, you know, good morning, how are you? People don't ignore you in Belmont Kurgan. And it's a sense of community that's there that I think is priceless. So I would say my favorite thing about the community of Belmont Kurgan is the community of Belmont Kurgan.
Nice.
I'm not going to go that deep because he really took it deep. Oh, gosh, that's such a hard question, but a good one. What is my favorite thing? I think of my grandfather's house that I grew up in on Moody Street in Schubert. It's about a block away from Reese Park, and it's where I learned how to ride my bike on that street and in Reese Park. So even though I can't put what is my favorite thing currently, I just keep thinking about my memories that I had as a child riding bike. My grandfather teaching me how to ride bike, and
awesome.
That's great.
One last thing for anybody listening or who will listen to this in the future. I highly encourage you to come to Belmont Kurgan, to go on a bike ride on our bike lanes, to eat some of our food. I think Belmont Creighton is often overlooked as a community by all the residents in the city of Chicago. When I tell people, oh, I'm from Belmont Creighton, they hear the word Belmont and think of Belmont Avenue. And so I highly encourage you to come on the northwest side of the city. Like I said, it's the fastest growing community population-wise in the entire city of Chicago. We have great food, great people, and thanks to the work that we've done, the hard work, we have great bike lanes for everybody to ride.
And shout out to all the youth council that was involved from the years 2017 to current.
That's right.
You know who you are.
That's great.
Right on. Well, thank you again for your time and for your insights. I'll say you can find more information about the Northwest Center at www.northwestcenterchicago.org. And you can find an English or Spanish version of the Shared Use Mobility Center's evaluation report of the Bikes for Belmont Creighton campaign at www.sharedusemobilitycenter.org/publications. So thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you.